Science can't explain everything. Just because you can't see me doesn't mean I'm not here.
Thank you for joining me, everyone, and welcome to Paranormal Encounters podcast series. My name is Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz. I am the host and the producer of this show. Sit back, grab yourself some popcorn, and let's get started.
Be careful what you wish for.
Yes, indeed. Let's get started. Tonight we have a very interesting guest on board, someone that I haven't interviewed before, and will probably be the only one that I know of to date. Mr. James Hershey is in the house. James is a experiencer and he's also a horror author. Yep, you heard me correctly. If you like to read scary books before bed, this one will keep you up all night long. In fact, I believe he has more than four that he has written and possibly another one on the way. But we'll have to talk to him a little bit about what he's up to, because this is one episode I guarantee you will like. So sit back, grab that popcorn, everyone, and as they say, pull those covers up over your head, because as they say, let's get scared. Stay tuned.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
Well, hello, James, and thank you so much for being on the show today.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
Oh, I'm just excited. You are my first horror author, and I think many of us probably haven't really heard too many interviews from a horror author, but you also do paranormal and demonic type investigations, which we're also going to talk about during this show. But as always, and everyone knows, this is the format that I go by. I actually want to know a little bit about your humble beginnings and where this all started for you. But I want you to go back to your earliest memory and try to bring us into how all this has evolved to where you're at now.
That's actually perfect for me, because it does start when I was a little kid. Mm-hmm. Ever since I can remember, I have been having these horrifying nightmares every single night. I've never had, you know how people tell you about the dream where they're flying in a plane with Snoopy and then they're naked in class and then they're falling mm-hmm. down, whatever. Yep. I've never had anything like that. All my dreams have always been the stuff that I write about for as long as I can remember. And when I was a real little kid, as you can imagine, it scared the ever-loving hell out of me. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would wake up sweating and crying and freaking out. Mm. And my grandmother told me to put a Bible underneath my pillow, and the dreams would stop. Mm-hmm. And, you know, hey, you listen to grandma, right?
Yeah.
Because they know.
Yeah.
But it didn't work. But I didn't tell her it didn't work because I didn't want to break her heart. Because, man, she had her hopes up for that. Mm. But I tried that, and it didn't work for me. I kept having the dreams, and I was even seeing like dead people all over the damn place. I'd see like spirits, except for they didn't look like spirits. They looked like I was looking at you, except for they'd be all jacked up. They'd have like knives in their head or big gunshot wounds. And I was a little kid.
Yeah.
And then at night when I would go to sleep, it was nothing but pure hell. I'd be in a different place watching the scenes from my books. And I could hear and smell and taste everything, but I just couldn't interact. It was like I was there, but I was just watching.
Oh, James,
they couldn't see me. They didn't know I was there.
Let me ask a question here. Let me ask a question, not to interrupt you, but this is a good spot for this question. All right. So I'm an investigator by nature anyway, but I am going to do a little investigation here. The house that you lived in, were you living with your grandmother or were you living with your parental family?
It varied because I grew up military. So I grew up over in Germany and then we would come back stateside for Thanksgiving because Thanksgiving in my family is a big deal. We're a bunch of rednecks from the mountains. So given you got hunting season, my birthday is November 26th. So that usually falls on Thanksgiving every couple years.
Yeah.
So Thanksgivings, we would come back. But I've lived all over the world. So I wouldn't chalk it up to like a haunted house or a haunted location. So this is something that has just followed me my entire life. And it scared the hell out of me. And this kept on going. And let me explain a little bit how the dreams actually worked.
Yeah.
What would happen is every night I would go to sleep and I would get one scene. And it would be in explicit detail. Everything about it, just like I was watching a movie, but I was in it.
Yeah.
And it would be one scene. And then the next night, I would get a different scene. And then the next night, I would get a different scene. And they weren't in any kind of order. They were all mixed up.
Yeah.
And eventually, they started repeating themselves. So what I figured was that meant that I got to the end of this narrative that I'm watching because now they're repeating themselves. And this went on for about a decade of my life to where I kept having the same dreams. And it's actually my first novel, I Am Legion. And it goes through the entire Legion series. It's a trilogy. I Am Legion, The Surrogate of Souls, and Rise of the Revenant. That is that series of dreams for my first 10 years that I can remember. And then I'm a big nerd as well. I was a Mensa kid. My IQ's over genius. So I was reading Scientific American, and they had an article about dream journals. They were doing this sleep study, and they were talking about dream journals. Now, that really has nothing to do with what I'm going to talk about, other than the fact that that's where I got the idea to start writing my dreams down, to see if I could make any kind of sense out of them. Okay. And I couldn't afford a fancy dream journal. Like I said, redneck from the mountains, zero money when I was young. I mean, we were lucky if we ate, to be honest with you. If we didn't hunt and fish, we didn't eat. That's how poor we were. Mm-hmm. And so I went down to the BX, and I bought for, I think, 10 cents or 15 cents, one of those three-subject spiral notebooks. Mm-hmm. And I just started writing down my dreams. And it didn't really make a lot of sense of what I was dreaming as far as bringing out any meaning.
Yeah.
But I noticed something very interesting and very strange that once I wrote the dream down, it didn't come back. So I would still have the others in the series, but as soon as I wrote the dream down, that particular scene never came back. And then once I got all of the scenes written down, a whole new story started, a whole new scenario. And I've been doing that my entire life now. I have the series of dreams every night. I wake up, I write them down when I wake up, and then I don't get that dream again. And that is what the Legion series is the first 10 years of my nightmares every single night that scared the hell out of me. And then I have a standalone novel called Call of the Wind Spirits. That is another series of dreams that I have.
Interesting question. Did you ever, not to get into the counseling thing, but did you ever find or seek somebody out who was able to try to attempt to interpret these dreams for you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've seen. I mean, one blessing of being in the paranormal field is I have access, especially because of my name. I mean, I'm a best-selling horror author, so a lot of people want to talk to me and hang out with me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I have access to some of the best minds in the paranormal field. Mm-hmm. And I have had so many people look at me. I've talked to so many people about it. I've gotten everything from remote viewing to that I'm astral projecting in my dreams to different dimensions or different worlds, to it's some sort of spiritual gift, to just I'm plain damn crazy. And I don't know what the answer is. I just know that it's real and it's happening. And it's always happened and it's just life for me. I'm not even 50 yet. I got gray in my beard and everything. This has been something that has really plagued my entire life. And it's not a pleasurable experience because if you've ever read my novels, they are they are horrifyingly scary. I mean, the New York Times book critic didn't sleep for 3 days after he read it. He wrote that. He said it was the scariest thing he's ever read. You know, well, I mean, they are horrifying.
Well, I'm looking at some of the covers that I have in the introduction of you. I even questioned myself if I wanted to even open up a page. But for those enthusiasts out there, listeners and viewers, by the way, on this show, don't hesitate if you really, really want to get, I guess, scared out of your pants. But I have a question for you, James. So you don't have to reveal where you are, but where you grew up, did you say you grew up in the mountains and or in a hilly area where you lived?
Yeah, my family is from both sides of my family. One side is from the mountains of West Virginia.
Oh.
And the other side is from the mountains of Virginia, down here in the Shenandoah Valley. Okay. And literally the line between Virginia and West Virginia runs right there. So it's like a minute or two down the road from it. So one side of the family is from that side of the line, one side of the family is from this side of the line. My family were hill people, basically.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, my grandmother didn't even have running water or a bathroom until I was almost a teenager. You know, I mean, we grew up poor. We grew up in the mountains. And on my mother's side, I have Cherokee and Blackfoot blood.
Oh.
So those people also were mountain people. You know what I mean? And then on my dad's side, I have Viking and Irish and Scottish.
Mm-hmm.
So pretty much all of my people come from the mountains. So I'm a hillbilly any way you cut it.
Well, I also grew up, by the way, with grandparents that had no running water and an outhouse, and went out to pump their water, and did so up until a couple of years ago, where, of course, everything went to its demise. But so I can relate to the, maybe not the frugalness, because you're in a different situation. They were also frugal. But I mean, in your case, you always hear of sometimes people being a little bit more on the poor side. But when you brought up West Virginia and Virginia, I don't know, all of a sudden I just had kind of a light bulb go off in my head, because I hear an awful lot of stuff or unusual things happening in those states. So have you ever researched your area at all to see if you were not somehow, some way, not, I agree with the remote viewing, by the way, or the ability to have premonitions that might tap into some kind of unusual energy in the area. Have you ever really looked at that area to determine if maybe you just somehow light bulb went on during those dreams? Have you ever looked at that?
Oh yeah, my immediate area where I live is extraordinarily active.
Yeah.
Because this is all battlefield area from Revolutionary War and Civil War. I mean, I literally have three major battlefields that I can walk to from my house in less than half an hour.
Yeah.
And then if you spread that out an hour radius, you're talking a dozen or more major battlefields where thousands and thousands of people were killed. And I believe that kind of suffering and that kind of death, it leaves behind what I call psychic impressions. And
yeah.
You will pick up on that energy.
Yes. Yes. And not only that, when you're, okay, think about some of these, well, don't think about them because you already written them down, but think about some of these dreams you're having when you were really young. Were they more battlefield related, or were they something of a different nature that maybe you were picking up on a dimension that many of us will never, ever, ever experience? What do you think about that?
They were more honestly like a cross between a slasher movie in some of them and like a movie that has a lot of supernatural elements. Because like Call of the Wind Spirits has to do with a nature demon that is feeding on a young child. And so that's more of a supernatural element. But the Legion series is literally about a serial killer couple that are murdering people in gruesome, gruesome ways. And then a demon becomes interested in them because of their savagery and chases them down and tries to take them out.
Wow.
And that's the plot of I Am Legion.
Wow.
And so it's it looks to me when I'm having these dreams like it's Earth. You know, I don't feel like I'm in another planet or something that's very foreign to me. Everything looks like it's supposed to look. Yeah. But if you're a proponent of the multiverse theory, you know that one small change creates an entirely new universe.
Yeah.
You know, according to the top astrophysicists in the world. So it very well could be that I'm slipping into other universes while I'm asleep. Who knows? I mean, I'm not claiming that. I've never been one that claims to have gifts or anything like that, because the way I look at it, who knows? You know what I mean? I know what I can do. I know what God has allowed me to do.
Yeah.
But as far as supernatural gifts, you got to be so careful with that, because not only do you not know for sure that you have them, but also you have to worry about where they're coming from. Are they from God or are they from something demonic? That's the question.
Well, I agree with you on that wholeheartedly, because lately, for those of us out there, especially those watching this program and listening, some of us, we have some additional things going on with us that when you talk to your friend or anybody and they go, well, I don't have that, you know, and then you start to wonder where all this has come from, or why is it that you're able to connect at a different level to something that virtually a lot of times we can't see. And so I agree with you. You got to be careful too about exactly what kind of influences are potentially unseen influences that are around you, because a lot of times, and I bring up, here's an example, and that maybe you can jump in on here. Here's an example of what I'm talking about. So I did a lot of ghost hunting, searching at my grandparents' house, the one that didn't have running water. And back in 2007, two apparitions showed up in the window, a screened window. I need to clarify that, because there's a difference between a plate window and a screened window. Okay. One was a little girl, about age 6, and one was a gentleman probably in his 70s. Now, I came down to the conclusion, because this gentleman and this little girl actually were part of this home, except she died 2 miles down the road in a different house. Okay, so now I'm hearing telepathically, you know, to check the genealogy that her name was wrong, and I did, and of course it was wrong. I thought it was really odd to hear that at the time. I did not see them. I photographed them, and then I blew it up, and then I went back to the property, and I said, stood there, and I was by myself, and I said, what message do you have for me? And that is how I heard, check the genealogy. Okay, now, how would I handle it to this day? I'm not sure, because you know as well as I do that little kids and elderly and all, they have a tendency to pull at our heartstrings. And so you think, oh my goodness, a little child showed up in the, and these are clear images, they're in my books. But anyway, they show up in the window and I'm thinking, oh my gosh, you know, they're talking to me. Oh my goodness, my relatives have actually shown themselves to me because all these connections, right? But then I started questioning a few things along the way of my investigating about, because I was bringing home some poltergeists, and they weren't necessarily nice ones either. And so then I started questioning whether what I really saw in the window was them, or, and which was great if it was them, or if it was something more of a trickster, kind of more of a demonic energy, something that draws you back to the property. Because then all of a sudden, I had a real interest in going back to that property a lot. And then things started to evolve to even a greater level. Now I'm going to put this on you, James. And I think, I mean, now you kind of understand. What are your thoughts about, let's just start with just general paranormal investigating about that, and when people get caught up in these things, what are your thoughts about that? Because you've done this for quite a while.
You have to be extraordinarily careful and make sure that you know what you're doing.
Yep.
The downfall and the worst sin of the popularity of the paranormal field, with it being on TV and everybody thinks it's so cool now.
Yeah.
The problem with that is that you have a lot of weekend warriors. And I don't mean any disrespect by that.
Yeah.
Believe me. But you have a lot of people that will watch Ghost Adventures or Ghost Hunters or something like that on TV and think, ooh, I want to do that. Mm-hmm. And they think that they're going to go out there. And on these TV shows, if they get a knock or an answer on a a phasma box or a spear box or something like that one time, that is the entire high point of the show.
Mm-hmm.
I've been on investigations where things have literally thrown us across the room, you know? So that makes people think that the worst that they can expect is a knock or a growl or maybe to get scratched.
Mm-hmm.
But in reality, these things are insanely dangerous. And if you are not properly prepared and if you do not have the proper knowledge, they will follow you home. They will attach to you. They will attach to your family. They will destroy your entire life, your job, your finances, your relationships, your health, and your mind. Mm-hmm. And eventually they will make you kill yourself or they will kill you with disease. I have seen it over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And another thing that a misconception people have is one thing I do on our demonic cases, I will cast out demons. I will do exorcisms. I do a process called emotional and spiritual healing where I actually go in and heal the soul and cast out individual demons from the wounds on the soul. I can go through that whole process with you if you want here in a couple minutes. It's really, really fascinating. It's actually the key that makes exorcism work that they never talk about in movies or books or anything like that. And that's kind of how you can tell somebody that really does it and knows what they're doing to somebody who saw a movie or read a book and thinks they know what they're doing. And it's just kind of faking.
Well, you gotta be
process right there.
You got to be careful about, so you're trained, you're a professional at this. And then there's many people listening to this program right now who, and seeing this program that, that may want to try something. But on the other hand, unless you're with a trained professional, I would probably agree, or you might agree with me that you probably shouldn't just do this on your own. But the question too that I have with you along that is, let's go back a little bit then, and let's hear about some of these first either cases that you've had. That would be real interesting to people because they love to hear stories. But when you first, so now you're a horror author. Did that, you know how they always say which kind comes first, the chicken or the egg? Which came first for you, James? Being an author and having these dreams that are just, you know, out of this world, or the investigating, which came first?
It's all kind of tied together.
Mm-hmm.
The dreams came first. The dreams started it all. That's my earliest memories in life are these dreams.
Yeah.
That started everything. And that is what fueled my interest in everything paranormal.
Okay.
Because I'm, like I said, I'm a smart kid, right? I was a genius. I was a member of Mensa. And I was a guy that honestly believed that everything has an answer. It's just a matter of finding.
Right.
If you do the science, you do the research, you will find the answer. So that's what I set out to do, and I made it my life's mission. I've been doing this for over 40 years now, and I've been researching since I was a child. Anything I can get my hands on. That's why if you ever listen to Staring Into the Abyss, you will find more information and more knowledgeable shows there than you will find anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
I have done shows that are so amazing that I don't even remember doing. Old boy, my co-host, will say, man, you remember when you did this show? And I'm like, oh, we did do that, didn't we? You know, I don't even remember some. We've done like a couple hundred, 200-300 shows.
Yeah.
And every single one of them is crazy research where I give you almost an hour of solid information and stuff a lot of times you don't hear anywhere else.
Yeah.
That's where that started, was when I was a little kid. And the genesis of it was desperately trying to find out what in the hell is happening to me.
Yeah.
Why am I in hell every single night? Why am I so damn scared?
Yeah.
As a kid, you know, that fueled everything in my life. I hold a master rank in San Xiao Kung Fu. I have studied 7 different martial arts. I am 6'5", 300 pounds, and I am a bad, bad man.
Mm-hmm.
The reason I am all those things is because when I was a little kid, I was scared to death all the time.
Yeah.
Every time I was afraid to close my eyes, I would wake up crying, so scared. That fueled me learning how to fight, how to defend myself, how to use weaponry. It fueled my journey into the paranormal, my research. It fueled everything. And then I got into doing the exorcisms and stuff because I started noticing that a lot of cases that I was working were a lot darker and had demonic influences into them.
I mentioned earlier that
I had native blood.
Okay.
So the first cases I ever worked was actually, I went to a powwow in Illinois when we lived there right outside of St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
And I got with a team of Native Americans there that did this. They took on elementals and demonic spirits and all kinds of stuff. And they were some of the most knowledgeable people I've ever met in my life. Now, at this point, I had well over a decade of solid research and investigation. And I had no idea what the hell I was doing compared to these people. They taught me more than I could ever learn from a book. And that kind of started me on the journey of the darker things, the more dangerous things. And the idea that it wasn't just about finding those answers, it was about helping people.
Yeah.
Because one thing they brought up to me that really made sense was, when a family is in trouble, being attacked by something like this, who the hell do they call?
I know.
They can't call the police. They can't call the fire department. They can't call the Marines. They will get put in a damn rubber room.
Yep.
We are who they call.
Yeah.
We come in and we fight these damn things. And fight, I don't mean physically fight. I mean spiritually do battle with these things to try to save those people. And it's not an easy task. And that's why I go back to the fact that if you don't have the knowledge and the experience, you're just going to make things worse for that family and hurt yourself.
Right. No, right. And that's very key on this entire interview, is that don't just be a copycat of what you see going on. Television access is very easy these days. You just have to be very, I think what we're both trying to stress here is that learn and understand what you're doing before you do it. Otherwise, yes, you could actually make things a lot worse. So you had brought up something just a moment ago, and I had a thought going through my head about when you were first getting into doing exorcisms and learning from your, I call them your teachers. And did you say this all began just outside of St. Louis when you started doing this?
Yeah, that's when I started getting into the darker things, because that's when I got with a gentleman, the natives that had the group there, and they dealt primarily with restless spirits and with elementals and stuff like that.
Yep.
But there were cases where we would have like suspected skinwalkers that we would have to go after, and suspected wendigos that we would have to go after. Now, most times on those cases, that's not the case.
Yeah.
Okay. Because like, I'll give you a great example, skinwalkers.
Yeah.
Skinwalkers is something that has become amazingly popular.
Yep.
But nobody knows what the hell they're talking about when they're talking about skinwalkers. You see pictures online of these skeletal deer, human monsters, things. Nobody has any idea what a skinwalker actually is a top-level shaman who has done a ritual where he has killed somebody he loves, somebody very close to him, in a blood ritual, and has enchanted a skin of an animal. It could be a wolf, it could be a deer, it could be a bear, it could be whatever the hell he wants. Yeah. And then what he does is he pulls that skin over himself, and it creates an illusion, a psychic illusion, that makes you see what looks like either a werewolf or a giant werebear or something like that.
Yeah.
But it's still just the dude with the skin over top of his head. He is just a practitioner of the black arts who has done magic. He's done a ritual over this skin to enchant it, to make you see what he wants you to see.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not actually a supernatural being. It's a man that's doing it.
Hmm.
See what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But popular culture has made the skinwalker into some monster that is just crazy. That's why one thing they always told me, which I always thought was kind of tongue-in-cheek and funny, is if you're going to shoot this thing, right? If you're dealing with a skinwalker, a real skinwalker case, and you're going to shoot it, you aim for its belly button.
Yeah.
And I said, well, why the hell would I want to aim for its belly button? I mean, that's going to give it a gut shot, it's still going to be alive for days. It's going to come rip me to pieces. They said, no, you're going to hit it either center mass or in the head, because it looks like it's 8 feet tall, but it's just a little guy holding a thing. So his belly button is around where you actually want to hit.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. You know, I'm going out to Utah in September, and I'm going to be meeting the cast of Skinwalker Ranch at this conference, and I'm not sure if I'm going to be interviewing any of them at all yet. That's still on hold. But you know, I've heard so many things happening on that ranch, and I know they're going to disclose a lot of interesting things. But what you bring up here is a really good point, is that everybody right now thinks all this stuff might happen up in Utah, and it's not. It sounds to me like this stuff can happen I'm not going to say anywhere, but almost anywhere. What are your thoughts on, have you done any research at all on where some of this stuff is showing up?
Well, you have multiple points all over the world.
Yeah.
You've heard of like the Railroad Beast up there near Pennsylvania area, that little triangle with multiple states. Mm-hmm. You have points like that all over the world that just, I don't want to call them high energy points,
right?
But a different energy point. That makes sense.
Yes.
There are places where I believe that the veil between worlds is thinner than other places. Now, whether you want to call it the veil, a doorway, a dimensional portal, whatever, it doesn't matter to me what you call it. But it's a point in space and time where whatever separates us from them, whether it is living and dead, or whether it is our universe and another universe, our dimension and another dimension, whatever separates those two planes of existence is thinner than other places. So what you end up with is bleed over. And I believe that the reason that we can hear these things on like spirit boxes and stuff like that has to do with psychic energy. And it's harnessed using crystals. And there's a reason why a lot of the ancient technology was made with crystal. There's a reason why there are pyramids all over the planet. It's because they're used as an energy source. Tesla had it absolutely right when he was trying to build those towers on different points of the planet to harness the geomagnetic energy of the planet. You can actually power the whole world without paying a cent, just by the magnetism of the planet. Tesla knew that. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what all the pyramids are, because you have the Aztec pyramids, you have Chinese pyramids, you have pyramids in Antarctica, you have pyramids in Egypt.
Yeah.
All these different points in the world are high energy points, and points where there is a thinner wall or divider between worlds. And I think that cosmic energy and that psychic energy can be harnessed. And I think that is what Tesla was trying to get to. He just didn't know how to explain it or what it was called. He referred to it as like the geomagnetic force of the earth, the magnetism of the earth. But I think all of those forces are kind of rolled into one. I think there's a lot more to the planet than we understand. And every time we think we understand something, something comes along that proves it differently.
Yeah, story of my life. Especially when I'm trying to figure out the word why. Why me? Why did this happen to me? Why am I attracting this? How do I get rid of it? Where did this come from? It seems like there's more questions than answers. But what I do like is the fact that there are individuals such as yourself who have actually taken the time to go and research some of this stuff and try to put the pieces together as best as you can until the next question comes up. And then you kind of chase after that and you just try to build on your questions. I have a question for you regarding your thoughts. You mentioned the part that has been very fascinating to me lately, which is the division between worlds, or possible vortexes, portals, unusual thinning of the veil, people walking right through, missing time. What are your thoughts at all about, they call them 411 disappearances, where people will just poof and disappear right in midair? Have you done any research at all, or any thoughts on that 411 disappearances?
Yeah, there's actually videos out there where you see somebody like walking across the street and then all of a sudden they're just gone. And it's really amazing and crazy. We could honestly be looking at some sort of wormhole kind of phenomenon that's happening. Because people think of wormholes, they think of something way out in space.
Right.
But we've created wormholes ourselves here on the planet. That's what the Hadron Collider essentially did, was created a little tiny mini black hole that only lasted an instant. But that is essentially what a wormhole is. It allows you to travel from point A to point B. Mm-hmm. Einstein said that if you can generate enough force to fold space, to actually bend space in the middle between point A and point B, that point A will become point B. Therefore, time travel is possible, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's what a wormhole essentially does. I don't know if it actually bends space-time, but I think that it kind of gives you a shortcut to where you go in one end and come out the other. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's so much pressure that it causes that. And if you look at black holes, the immense amount of pressure inside of a black hole, it basically turns everything into its most dense form. It just crushes everything right down. Mm-hmm. And I think that also could be a way that we could travel. I know it's absolutely insane and I wouldn't want to try it, but if anybody actually tried to go through a black hole, they might don't die, that they actually end up somewhere else. Who knows?
Well,
like I said, I wouldn't try it.
Yeah, it's fascinating because black holes are also another something that I've been always kind of looking at for quite a while. And I don't study them and I don't research them, but I agree with you 100%. Sometimes you wonder if someone could actually make it through a black hole without being, you know, crushed up or minimized to nothing, to see what happens and where you get on the other side. I think that's fascinating as well. So
have you seen the NASA footage of all of the small wormholes that are opening up in our atmosphere?
I have heard about them. I have barely like a blip it. Bloop, I just to see it. And I have heard about that. And that actually makes me a little nervous.
Interesting, because in the footage they released to the public, you see all these little tiny wormholes opening up and closing almost instantly. But they have other footage that show craft actually going through and out.
Oh, interesting.
That hasn't been released to the public yet, but it's really amazing. And I'm wondering if that's not exactly what we're looking at. There is some sort of transportation portal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like the wormhole is a tunnel that leads from their planet to ours or whatever. And that's how they're getting here. That makes sense to me. Now, like I said, we won't know for sure until they officially release the footage, if they ever do, and we can really study it and independently verify it with scientists.
Yeah.
But from what it appears, from what I've seen of it, it looks to me like that could be the answer to how these things get here.
Well, and I agree with you on that, and I was just going to ask that as my next question to you. So just recently, I would say in the last couple of years, I have evolved. I feel I've evolved, or maybe something is showing itself to me differently than, and I presumed it was something else. I was just telling somebody about this on another show. I said, first, my experiences, I think they're spiritual, and then all of a sudden I'm categorizing them as paranormal. And then I know everybody wants to umbrella everything under paranormal, that's extraterrestrial, but right now I want to keep the division there because it helps me just to separate my thoughts. But I'm going to ask you this, and let's start back where you grew up. So you were in a place, and of course they're all over California too, but they're everywhere. Did you ever see visually when you grew up what is considered to be a UFO or a craft or anything or a light? A big ball light anomaly going through the sky, zipping through. Did you ever see anything like that when you were younger?
This is a tricky question.
Mm.
I mentioned that I grew up military, and I have worked on projects for NASA and for other government agencies that I'm not supposed to be talking about.
Yeah.
I have to be very careful. I will say that I have seen aliens.
Yeah.
I can tell you they 100% exist.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say where they're from, what they do, any of that kind of stuff or how I know.
Yeah.
But let's just say I have seen with my own eyes, I know for a fact 100% that these things exist.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that doesn't surprise me, because look at the vastness of the universe.
Yeah. You
know, if life can be here.
Mm-hmm.
And then we found microbiology life on Mars and on Europa.
Yeah.
The moon of Jupiter. So that's three instances already. They're also talking about now they found life on Venus that they believe, microscopic life on Venus.
Mm-hmm.
So that's four. If it happens once, it's an anomaly. It's a miracle. It's, oh my God, I can't believe everything came together perfectly for this one thing.
Right.
Happens four times, that's a pattern, that's repeatable,
right?
Which means it's repeatable throughout the entire universe whenever conditions are correct for life as we know it. Now, there could be life we don't know. Look at our oceans.
I know.
There are vents in our oceans that are belching up magma and sulfur and just the worst gases from this thing that are so toxic to all life. There's life that's thriving in those vents, just loving being there, just hanging out, having parties. Mm-hmm. They're doing great.
Yeah.
That life is not supposed to exist as far as we understand it, because everything it's ingesting is toxic.
Right.
So my point in saying that is, who knows in the universe what kind of life could be out there? There could be things that are living in environments that we believe are entirely inhospitable to any form of life, but they're just prospering and doing great. It's just life as we know it. So the idea that there is life out there in the universe, to me, is a given. Mm-hmm. And religious people will point, and I myself am a born-again Christian. I do exorcisms. I do God's work. Okay, so understand when I'm saying this, I'm coming to this from a very, very devout Christian point of view.
Yeah.
But you'll hear Christians say all aliens are demons, or you'll hear Christians say, well, aliens can't exist because they didn't talk about them in the Bible. Well, people need to understand what the Bible is. The Bible is not everything that's ever happened in the history of everything. The Bible is essentially God's love letter to us.
Yeah.
It's God telling us how much he loves us. And I mean, look at the entire New Testament. The whole point of the New Testament is that we are all sinners, that we've all sinned and deserve hell, and that Jesus took our punishment for us so that we don't have to burn.
Mm-hmm.
That is love. That is God saying, I love you. That's what the Bible is. It's calling us to repentance. It's calling us to paradise, that we don't have to go to hell. The Bible is not the entire written history of everything that's ever happened everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't surprise me that the Bible doesn't talk about some things. Of course it doesn't. Why? If you're writing a love letter to your wife, would you write how many Slim Jims you ate on Thursday? No. Why the hell would you? It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
You would write about how much you love her. And that's, I think, what God did with the Bible.
Question for you. Yes. And again, to our viewers and our listeners, we all interpret the Bible in various ways. There's many people that are very Christian and are, I would like to use the word, I'm not sure if I want to use the word fearful, of the unknown or the unseen or the seen, because as you mentioned, you have seen. And I hope to never see, but I have been the recipient of something, a handprint that showed up on my body a year and a half or whatever ago now, blood red, lasted for 3 hours and then just suddenly disappeared. And it was not my hand, and it was somebody's hand. And so now, when we want to talk about interpretation, some that are very, very into their religions, yes, they will say, well, that was your grandmother, or that was your someone that you knew in your family. Okay, someone from a paranormal, like I said, I'm trying to separate paranormal extraterrestrial here, would say, oh, my God, somebody was in your house that, you know, whatever, and they placed their hand on you and burn their mark in you. And then someone from the extraterrestrial realm, which I've just now gotten into a little bit more, like myself, would say, no, I think that was a little bit extraterrestrial. We have elongated fingers, although this is how things are described. I'm sure a lot of extraterrestrials out there may not have elongated fingers, but this one did and had a crooked finger and it was upside down and all this kind of stuff. And I'm going to tell you that even though I'm on a mission to try to figure out what that was, I will never know the answer. All I know is that it was on my body and it lasted 3 hours and it was blood red and it wasn't my hand. And those are the facts behind that. Now, here's my question to you. So we're talking, when you had brought up the oceans, all of a sudden I had a visual, something that a lot of people, some, you see it on TV and all that stuff, and you're kind of in disbelief. But I agree with you. From what I understand, there are cities of whatever hiding or living way down deep into the ocean. And one in particular that has surfaced a little bit. Have you ever seen or heard about these mermaids, James?
Yeah, there's a long history of lore concerning mermaids.
Mm-hmm.
And there are so many different theories, everything from the supernatural to the extraterrestrial, like you said.
Yeah.
One thing that would tend to support the idea that aliens are living inside our oceans is the footage that was released recently by the U.S. Navy of the Tic Tac UFOs.
Mm-hmm.
They call them UAPs, unidentified aerial phenomena, but I'm old school. I'm an old guy. Yeah. So to me, they've always been UFOs. They always will be.
Yeah.
But these things, and these actually they call USOs now because they're underwater submersible objects or something.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But these things were flying and they were being chased by jets, by fighter jets. And they were maneuvering in ways that no technology that we possess can possibly do. And I grew up in the Air Force, okay? I'm telling you, we do not have the capability to do what these things can do.
Yeah.
And then they just zoop right underneath the water.
Yep.
Like nothing, just kept on going. So that would make me think that there's a reason they went under there. And we have a lot of footage and a lot of accounts of these things coming out of the water in different parts of the world and flying around.
Yep.
So that would lead me to believe that it is very possible that they do, in fact, have some sort of base under the water. Now, let's go back in time.
Mm-hmm.
Let's look at the lore. For mermaids, you automatically associate Atlantis. Even though Atlantis in history, that Plato was talking about, was a city above that sank below because of a volcanic eruption.
Mm-hmm.
But let's look at the lore on it. A lot of the lore on mermaids say that there's an underground city. Some of them call them Atlanteans.
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So could Atlantis, that underwater city that they're talking about where mermaids lived or whatever, could that actually be the underground base of some race of extraterrestrial that has put a base under our ocean?
Right.
Because think about if you had to put a base on Earth and you didn't want anybody to see you.
Right.
There's only a couple places on Earth you could really do it where nobody's going to see you. You could either go like Antarctica or the North Pole or something that's way, way out in the middle of glacier territory where nobody lives. But that sucks. It's cold. Nobody wants to do that.
Right.
Or you could go underneath our oceans. If you think about the fact that we have no idea what's down there in all reality, I mean, there's places like Mariana Trench that's like 5,000 feet down.
Mm-hmm.
We've only been there a couple times, and you can only stay there for a few minutes because the pressure is so intense, it'll crush you.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I mean, it'll literally crush your crap, just like an aluminum can. Right. So we have no idea what's down there in all reality. I mean, there's still arguments of whether the Megalodon shark actually still exists or not, whether it actually went extinct. People say that's crazy, but look at the coelophant. The coelophant was something that supposedly went extinct like millions of years ago in the time of dinosaurs, and one washed up on the coast of Madagascar. It was caught off the coast. So we now know that they still exist, and I think that is the key to things like Nessie, to things like Bigfoot. Like Bigfoot is Gigantopithecus, I believe, an early hominoid species.
Yeah.
Nessie is most likely some sort of plesiosaur or some other sort of aquatic dinosaur that has survived.
Right.
That lock is connected to the ocean through a bunch of different underwater tunnels and different river systems. There's no reason to believe that thing couldn't come back there just like salmon do to spawn, to mate and lay its eggs or whatever the hell it does in that lock and then go back out to the ocean where we'd never find it.
Well,
and that's why you only have...
And and not only that too, James, I had just heard recently, my husband and I were joking, but maybe we shouldn't have been joking about this. Just recently they had discovered, and I can't remember where this was. What is it? These, not pterodactyl, you know, kind of like the, on Jurassic Park, those types of, some of those, thinner dinosaur type, flying ones. They actually discovered, someone had just discovered that there are some of those still flying around. So even though we think that we've uncovered most of this planet, there are places in this planet, from what at least I understand, that hasn't even been touched yet for years and years and years, or ever been touched at all and not discovered. Would you kind of agree with that? Or do you think that we pretty much know everything that we know about this planet?
Well, I agree 100% with you.
Yeah.
And I think The pterodactyl is one member of a large genus of a flying dinosaur.
Okay, that's one.
I think that's what the Thunderbird from Legend is. The native legend of the Thunderbird. I think that's exactly what it is. I mentioned Bigfoot is, I believe, Gigantopithecus. That's an ancient hominoid species. Mm-hmm. The Loch Ness Monster, plesiosaur. Mm-hmm. Mekele Mbembe, I believe, is some sort of brontosaurus-type dinosaur. It's obviously not that large. There was a lot of smaller versions of the brontosaurus that were semi-aquatic dinosaurs. I apologize. The exact name escapes my memory at the moment. I'm not a paleontologist. I just love to tinker with it because it's fun. Yeah. But there were a lot of species that fit that description of the Mekele Mbembe. And we have literally hundreds of eyewitness testimonies that this thing exists down in the Congo. Mm-hmm. And you might think, well, dude, if there was a dinosaur still alive in the Congo, we'd have found it. Okay, there was a gorilla called a silverback gorilla that was legend for hundreds and hundreds of years that everybody laughed at you if you said it existed, and now we know for a fact that it exists.
Yeah.
It was legend, and we actually found it. It's called the silverback gorilla, and everybody accepts it as normal now. You look at the giant squid. That is the Kraken of lore. We know now that they exist. We have them on camera, that we have seen them, but for hundreds of years, those were tall tales from the sea stories.
Right.
You know, sea monsters. They exist. We saw them. We know that they're there. We have the footage. You can look it up. You can find it yourself. Right. Over and over again, we find these cases of these mythical and animals of lore, such as dragons. Mm-hmm. Now, I want to ask you a question. Look at all the lore on dragons. Every single culture in the world has a mythology surrounding dragons. They all exist in every mythology. What is a dragon if not a dinosaur?
Exactly
that. So I believe that there were still pockets of dinosaur species that were around in the Middle Ages and before that mankind actually fought against. They found here in the United States there was a set of human footprints that was indented into the stone of a mountain. And on top of those human footprints was the print of a dinosaur, which means that when the dinosaur stepped there, a human had stepped there before, which means we existed at the same point in time as they did. Now, I'm not saying it was the Flintstones, where there was dinosaurs every damn where. But if we look at today's world, dinosaurs still exist.
Yeah.
We have things like certain species of shark that were around in the Jurassic and Triassic periods. We have the alligator, the crocodile, the sea turtle all around at that same time.
Right. I even think these giant tortoises out in Galapagos Islands are around there too. I'm still sitting here going, where do they come from? And how long have they been around? And maybe they've been around longer than whatever, but I agree with that. You bring up a good point though on, I wanted to tickle your mind a little bit on Bigfoot, and I'm going to explain why here, because it seems like there's a variety of species of Bigfoots or Sasquatches, or how people want to refer, Yetis, whatever they want to refer to them as. Now, when you grew up in a very wooded area, and they love wooded areas, obviously, did you ever have an encounter, see, or as a young child, know about big feet, Bigfoot, Sasquatches, anything like that?
Well, yeah, I saw one out here at the place I'm living now, and I actually chased it. After it. Yeah, it's a funny, I tell the story on Staring a couple times in different episodes about Bigfoot that we did. Yeah. My wife, we had just got married at the time. We were married less than a year. Mm-hmm. And I'll just say about my wife, I married way out of my league. My wife was hot. You know what I mean?
Was hot or still is hot?
Well, she still is.
Okay, there you go. That's
was
better.
Higher than we were younger. But she was at work, and I was outside. This is back when I smoked cigarettes, and I was outside smoking a cigarette, and I looked up at the barn, and I saw this thing standing by the tree.
Okay.
And I thought, what in the hell is that? And I thought it was a bear at first.
Yeah.
So my initial thought was, dude, my wife's coming home, like, in an hour or less. If that bear is still here, it's going to scare the hell out of her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm going to hear it, right? So my idea is, a lot of people don't know this, bears don't really want nothing to do with you. Now, if you're dealing with the grizzly, it's different.
Mm.
But brown bears and black bears, to a certain extent, they could hurt you, but they usually don't. Mm-hmm. But most bears, if you kind of make yourself big and run up on them, and I'm big anyway, like I said, mm-hmm. I'm 6'5", 300 pounds. Mm-hmm. So you make a lot of noise, spread out, and you run towards them screaming and hollering and jumping up and down, usually they take the hell off. They don't want nothing to do with you. Mm-hmm. So that's what I thought I'd do. I'd run at this thing yelling and just scare it away so it didn't get my wife.
Right.
Well, I'm expecting this thing. I think that it's underneath the tree and kind of leaning up because it was a fruit tree. I thought it was trying to get some fruit, right?
Right.
And it went back down on all fours and run away. Well, no, this thing turns and runs like a sprinter away from me. Jumps over, like hurdles my back fence. And my back field is like a couple hundred yards long to get to the other fence. And by the time I reached that fence line, which was maybe 20 yards, mm-hmm. it was already jumping over the other fence. It was that fast. And it ran the whole way like a sprinter, not on all fours at all. And I thought, holy crap, that was not a bear at all.
Yeah.
And then so I went out and I measured the tree to see, because mm-hmm. once again, scientists, right?
Yeah.
I measured the tree because I wanted the data. I wanted to see how big is this thing? Because it looked to me like it was at least 9 feet tall. That would be my initial guesstimate when I looked at it. It was gigantic. And it was really, really big and stout and scary looking, right? Across. That's why I thought it was a bear. It was big and muscular. But when I actually measured the tree, its head was just underneath of this limb. I mean, literally, you couldn't even see air in between the limb and the head. Mm-hmm. And when I measured to that limb, it was 12 foot, 1 or 2 inches. I don't remember the exact. It was just over 12 feet. So this thing stood either almost 12 feet or just at 12 feet tall and was a couple feet across, at least 3 or 4 feet across. It was gigantic.
Yeah.
And it was that fast. And it got away. Obviously, it got away. What was I going to do if I caught it anyway? I didn't think about that part. I was just trying to scare a bear away.
What color was it? James, what color was it?
It was a cross between brown and gray.
Yeah.
It was mostly brown, but it had gray spots. So it must have been a little bit older.
Yeah.
And like I said, it looked to me to be a bear that was standing up and trying to reach for the fruit of the tree. That's what I thought it was. Mm-hmm. But when it took off running, it never hit all fours. It ran the entire way on two legs. And I've never seen a bear. I've seen a lot of bear. And I've never seen a bear do that. I've seen a bear rear up on its back legs and scare the hell out of me. I've seen it come at me on two legs for a couple of steps and then come down to four to attack. Mm-hmm. I've never seen a bear sprint a couple hundred yards on two legs and hurdle the damn fence like an Olympian. I've never seen a bear do that in my life. Yeah. So the only thing I can think of is that that was Bigfoot. So that was my encounter that I saw with this thing. But the native people have extensive lore and legends about what they call wild men, mm-hmm. which is Sasquatch, Bigfoot. Mm-hmm. And they believed it to be not a mythical creature, but a flesh and blood, absolutely real that exists creature that they traded with, that they treated with respect, that they knew. So to me, if you look at, once again, every single culture on earth has legends about this creature. And the idea that you have different kinds, you have the Yowie, you have the skunk ape, you have the Texas Bigfoot is different than the Washington State Bigfoot.
Right.
You have Bigfoot in Russia. You have Bigfoot in China. You have Bigfoot in the Himalayas. Mm-hmm. And they're all a little bit different. And to me, that proves something. See, a lot of people think that disproves Bigfoot. I think it proves Bigfoot. Mm-hmm. Because remember what I think Bigfoot is. It is an early hominoid species called Gigantopithecus. It is not man, but it is a relative of man.
Right.
It is a hominoid species that was around 12 feet tall and was about the dimensions of what I saw.
Mm-hmm.
And they were rather intelligent. They weren't as intelligent as us, supposedly. Who really knows? But they were intelligent. And I believe they still exist in small pockets. I believe that's what Bigfoot is. And it makes sense that you would have different types mm-hmm. because there's different types of us.
Mm-hmm.
I, a gigantic Viking redneck, mm-hmm. right? 6'4", 300 pounds is a lot different than a little 4 foot tall Chinese guy from China.
Yeah.
We're the same species.
Right.
Genetically, we are identical pretty much. There's no reason why I should be a giant and he should be a midget. It doesn't make any damn sense, but it's real. Right. We have those differences based on where we grow up, our environment, and to a small extent, our genetics and everything like that. And it makes 100% sense that Bigfoot, being a hominoid species, would have that exact same diversity in the gene pool to where you have all kinds of different types and based on the area.
Well, I agree with that because my first encounter with that type of difference that I agree with you was when I was a lot younger. I actually went to a party in northern Minnesota. I was staying over at a friend's house, and we went into this bar, and these guys, I kid you not, were probably, I know they were at least 6'8" to 7'7" tall. And all I could say was, what do you guys feed them up here? Because they were just absolutely tall. And I agree with you. And in some of these Bigfoot, in certain areas of the Yeti or whatever, I hear some of them are like nastier than some. So they also have their own personalities. And we have some here in Minnesota, and usually in the wooded areas in the upper Minnesota. But I was just telling somebody the other day that my a manager of mine was out. She's in a wooded area with her house, and it, not as high up in Minnesota, but she heard something terrible growl. Just, you know, she could tell there was something that she's never heard of before. And I said, oh, you know, probably a Bigfoot making its way coming down from where it's normally at, but they can be just about anywhere. But here's my question to you. So I was, this story is apparently a true story. I've told it a couple times. I did not witness it. I cannot validate it. I cannot make it as fact, but I believe the person who shared the story. So I'm going to just put it out there like that. So this person lived in a wooded area, also in kind of like a cabin house kind of sort of thing. And there was a Bigfoot that was approaching the house closer and closer all the time. And they had seen this thing. And they thought, oh, my God, you know, I don't want it to come into the house. Well, one day it got so close to the house that it appeared like it was going to come and like bust down the door or something like that. It wasn't necessarily growling or anything, but it scared the owner. So he got his shotgun out, of course. What else? And he opened up that door and he took one shot and he boom, bang, right at the Bigfoot, and it poofed. James, why don't you go ahead and tell everybody how they can hear, see you, listen to your shows, how to get to your books, and if you have a website, if they want to contact you, especially on anything. Are you still doing demonic cases? I should ask that right off the bat here.
Yeah, that's primarily what I do now. I still do the radio show Staring to the Abyss.
Yeah.
And we do Tales from the Abyss on the YouTube channel, which is basically just footage from all of our different cases. But yeah, we still do that. The YouTube channel is youtube.com/James Hershey Jr. My email is horrorauthorjameshersheyjr@yahoo.com.
Well, that's a wrap. Thanks, James, for being on the show.